Welcome to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of Gunsmoke entitled Shakespeare.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
It was the dust. The heat was bad enough in Dodge City, but out on the plain, it was the dust. The sun was a burning red-brown chip in the sky, and the sweat on a man never had a chance to drop. It was blotted and dried with dust. Doc Chester and I had ridden to Old Man Gore's place 10 miles out. He'd had some trouble with one of the hands. Fella had gone loco with liquor and had been shooting up the cattle. We found him, stripped naked nearby on his haunches, crying, drunk over a parched water hole. Doc had got him to bed and fixed him up some. And now we were heading back for Dodge.
Darn horse. Seems he's just bound to stomp all the dust in Kansas in my eyes.
Maybe the marshal'll buy you a camel, Chester.
This keeps up, we'll all buy camels. I remember the time back in Waco when I was just
Doc,
a small...
Doc, Chester,
boy.
You see something ahead on the side of the trail there?
Yeah, maybe.
It looks like some poor calf strayed off and dropped.
I don't think so. It looks like a man. Come on. Chester, get the water bag.
Yes, sir.
Let me have a look, Marshal.
Yeah.
Let's see. Heat.
Is he all right?
Well, depends on how long he's been lying here.
Here you are, Mr. Dillon.
Open up his shirt, Marshal. Chester, get some of that water on his wrist.
All right.
It looks like an Easterner, huh?
Sure not dressed for this country. Oh, no, that's better. That's better. Try to get a few drops in him.
All right.
Not too much, Chester.
Not in his nose, Chester. His mouth.
Well, my gracious, I'm sorry, Mr. Dillon, but he moved his head. It's not so easy to... Hey, look, he's awake.
You're all right, mister. Just take it easy for a bit now.
Oh, that this too, too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a Jew.
What did he say?
Oh, it's out of his head, Chester.
For this relief, much thanks.
Forget it, Chester. Get around the other side and shade him from the sun.
Yes, sir.
The sun. I begin to be aweary of the sun.
I don't blame you. What happened?
My wagon shed a wheel, I fear, along the high road. I know not where I am.
You're about 4 miles out of Dodge City. Kansas.
Kansas. I would give all my fame for a pot of ale and safety.
We better get him to town quick. He's in a bad way. He's delirious.
You think you can make it on a horse? We'll take you into... We'll take him into Dodge. And he passed out again. We tied him across Doc's horse. Doc and I doubled up, and Chester rode behind. The stranger was a tall, skinny man with a face like a friendly mule. Big hands and thin wrists stretched out from his sleeves. He had no papers on him, nothing. And until he woke up, we wouldn't even know his name. Doc settled him down in the back of his place, and he was still asleep when Chester and I rode out to where we figured he'd left his wagon. Wasn't hard to see when we found it.
What color wagon would you call that, Mr. Dillon?
Puce, Chester. Puce.
I guess so. Seems to be some writing on the side there.
Yeah. Oh, Irving Henry, Thespian Supreme Disciple of the Immortal Bard.
I should have known he was a religious man.
He's an actor, Chester, the Immortal Bard. Shakespeare, William Shakespeare, wrote plays, poems.
You think he let the horses go, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I was wondering that. Seems to me he'd have ridden for help instead of trying to walk.
Horses couldn't have got out of the harness themselves.
Well, let's take a look at the wheel.
I wish we could wait till the sun goes down. It's going to be awful hot work, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. It's not too bad. The pen fell out. Must be another in the box at the back. Take a look, will you, Chester?
Yes, sir.
I'll prop the wheel up here. Now.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, can't you find it?
Will you come here a minute?
What's the matter?
Take a look in there.
It took a second or two to get used to the darkness inside the wagon. And then I saw the hand sticking out from behind a trunk. You didn't have to be the doc to know that it was a dead hand. The body was of a man about 40. He was dirty. And in a greasy, torn waistcoat, I found a pocketbook with his name. Sam Matchett. And that was all. Below his left shoulder and his back was a patch of dried blood. And in the middle, a bullet hole. We got the wagon wheel on, hitched up our horses, and drove into Dodge. Doc?
Oh, that's you, Marshal?
Yeah.
Yeah, be right out.
All right.
Get that fella's wagon fixed up?
Yeah, I brought it in. Is he awake?
Oh, I haven't looked in the last half hour. I was making coffee. You want some?
No, thanks.
Oh, it's a funny thing about coffee when it's hot weather like this. Drink it scalding and it makes you feel cooler outside.
Look, Doc, I got to see that fellow. I want to ask him a couple of questions.
Oh, that's so?
I found a dead man in the back of his wagon.
You don't say?
You better take a look. Chester's bringing him in the side.
Oh, sure. You want to go on back?
Yeah, thanks, Doc. Mr. Henry? Mr. Henry, wake up.
Yeah, what? Oh.
Your name, Irving Henry?
Oh, Irving Henry. What is this place?
Now, you got to listen to me for a minute. We found your wagon.
Ah?
Did you let the horses go before you sat on your own?
Of course. I could not let them remain to die.
Well, how come you didn't take one to ride?
I have a loathing of horses. I cannot bear one under my body. There is a carafe of water beside the bed. Would you be good enough, Mr.
Dillon, Matt Dillon. I'm the marshal here in Dodge City. Here you are.
Oh, my thanks.
Now, what were you doing with a dead man in your wagon, Mr. Henry?
A dead man?
A dead man shot in the back, lying in your wagon.
This is very Midsummer Madness.
I won't argue about that, but I'll thank you to answer my question.
But it is impossible. It isn't true.
I say it is.
You lie in your throat if you say that I'm any other than an honest man.
Look, mister, I didn't say you weren't honest. You're an actor. And you got a fine way of saying things, but murder's murder. I don't care how you say it. Now, I'm asking questions, and I want straight answers.
Your pardon, sir. But what you tell me, in truth, if it were played upon a stage, I would condemn it as an improbable fiction. I swear to you, I know nothing of a body.
Did you come through Hayes City?
Yes.
Do you know a man there called Sam Matchett?
No.
You had no trouble in Hayes City?
No.
What are you doing in these parts, Mr. Henry?
I am touring the provinces. An actor eating the bitter bread of banishment. And my talents are not taken for their worth in the East. And therefore, I bring the immortal bard to the hinterlands. And now, sir, that the interview is ended, pray give me leave to depart.
I'm sorry, I can't do that. You'll have to stay until we get this thing cleared up.
Mr. Dillon, Doc would like to see you.
All right, Chester. Stay here with Mr. Henry, will you?
Well, sure, Mr. Dillon, sure. How are you feeling by now, Mr. Henry? Would you like more water?
These evil manners live in brass.
Doc?
Right here, Marshal.
Fill me cup for father's boy.
What'd you find?
Well, there's one thing. This man didn't die right away. I mean, not right when he was shot.
Is that so?
No. More likely bled to death. Inside.
You think he might have been able to climb up in the wagon after he was shot?
Well, he might. There's another thing.
Yeah?
You see the way he's dressed? Now, you take a look at that.
What? Help!
Come on, Doc. Chester.
What's the matter with him?
Chester.
He took my gun when I was pouring him some water, Mr. Dillon.
He must have gone through the window, Marshal.
I tried to get it back. It went off.
Take care of Chester, Doc. I'm going after him.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, do you know how old the school building in your community is? If it's over 25 years old, the chances are that it's woefully inadequate to the present demands on it. Certainly thousands of schools all over America are unable to meet the needs of a greatly increased enrollment. And all our school children will suffer unless all of us work actively to improve conditions. Join with the groups in your community working for better school conditions. Remember, better schools build a stronger America. Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
When I went out of there, I didn't know how badly Chester was hurt. There was a lot of blood on his head and over his face. It was nearly dark outside, and the street was empty. It was supper time. I could see the women through the windows getting food ready. The kids were inside, too. Sure looked peaceful. But with Henry out with a gun, well, that wasn't a good thing to have running around loose in Dodge. Did you see a man run down the street, Miss Fletcher?
Well, no.
Well, you better get inside and lock your door. Don't come out again. There's a killer loose. I walked the length of the street, listening, waiting. And when I got to the end, there was nothing. He hadn't taken a horse, I'd have heard that. And in a way, I was sorry, because if he'd tried to hide and dodge, there'd be no way to get out of shooting that wouldn't get women and kids hurt. A breeze came up and swirls of dust flew around, and then settled as the air became still and hot again. I went back to Doc's place.
Oh, did you find him, Marshal?
No. How's Chester?
Oh, I'm fine, Mr. Dillon. Just creased my head. More mess than hurt.
Oh, good, Chester. Look, you want to go home or you want to work?
I want to work.
All right, go down to the office, get yourself another gun, and round up some men, many as you can. As long as Henry stays in town, we're in trouble. Now keep your eyes open. Meet me back here.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
Take my gun with you, and if you see him, watch out. All right, I get going.
Yes, sir.
Now, Doc, I'm going to have to make you a deputy, too.
Well, maybe instead of digging out bullets, I'll be putting some in.
It's not funny, Doc. Now, come on. All right, we'll start here. I'll take this side, you take the other. Get the men to go through their houses and tell them to look for their horses. Tell them what's happening. But 10 o'clock that night, as far as we could tell, Henry hadn't left town. There were plenty of places for him to hide, though. We had 50 men out searching. Chester and I were working along back of the express office. There were a couple of houses there we hadn't covered.
You wouldn't think a man like that would be a killer, now would you, Mr. Dillon?
I never saw a man yet couldn't be, Chester. Depends on your reasons for killing, I guess. Now, let's take a look behind these boxes.
You think he could have got this far?
Yeah, he might. A lot of back streets to sneak around in the dark. That's Miss Cullen's place there, you know?
Yes, sir. Looks like she's still awake. Light burning back there.
Yeah.
Seem a bit cooler to you tonight, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, a bit. Oh, evening, Miss Cullen. I'm sorry to get you up, but we're looking for a man, a stranger around. He's tall, thin. You seen anyone about tonight?
No. No, I haven't.
Huh? How's the kids?
Oh, they're fine. Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Fine.
Uh-huh. Well, you keep the place locked tight, Miss Cullen. Don't let anybody in tonight unless you know who it is.
All right. Good night, Mr. Dillon.
Good night, ma'am.
Well, now, that's strange. She didn't even say hello to me, and I know her better than you do, Mr. Dillon.
Chester, round up the others. Get them over here.
I don't know why she...
He's in there with her. I think he's got the kids in the sleeping room.
Well,
sent her out to get rid of us. Now, I'm going to try and get in. Don't do anything when you come back. Just put the men around the house.
Yes, sir.
I'd seen Miss Cullen make a move with her head. And her eyes said the rest. When I told her to lock up, I shook my head, and I hoped she understood. I wanted that front door to stay open.
As soon as I can.
He was in there, all right. I could hear him. I wanted him alive. But I wasn't going to risk hurt to Miss Cullen or the kids getting him.
Please. I did what you asked. Don't hurt the children, please.
They will never know this night. And in the morning, when they're awake. What's that? You said you locked the door after you.
No, don't. Don't.
I shall keep the pistol turned to the girl's head, ma'am. Someone is here. They try to take me.
is it? Who?
Mr. Dillon, go away. Please. He'll kill us.
You lied. You lied. A tiger's heart wrapped in a woman's hide. Listen to me, Marshal Dillon. Throw your pistol in here and then come in with your hands before you. I have no stomach for child killing, but I will not hesitate to do so.
Now give me the gun, Henry.
No.
You won't be able to get out of this.
I must. There is living to be done.
You know, that fancy talk isn't going to help either. Now, why don't you climb down? What happened to Matchett?
Nothing happened to Matchett.
Why'd you kill him?
I didn't.
In 5 minutes or less, there'll be 50 men or more around here. Now, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
If you didn't kill Matchett, you'll get a chance. I'll see to that. There's no use going on this way. Give me the gun.
I cannot. It is my prop of salvation.
No gun is salvation to anybody. Put it down.
You must tell the men to go away, Marshal Dillon. I'll have to take one of these children with me for my protection.
No!
Shed a tear for me, madam. I have the greater need.
You do a lot of talking, mister. I'd like to see you turn the gun away from that kid's head. That'd take more than talk, wouldn't it, though?
I have no skill with such a weapon. Why should I match with you? I want to live.
You're going about it the wrong way.
The smallest worm will turn, being trod upon.
Meaning?
You gave me no choice when you brought me here. Would have been better to have left me lying in the dust. You don't understand. You don't know.
Well, why don't you tell me?
What good would it do?
It depends.
My life has been the theater. As a boy, I was a student of Shakespeare. He would look at me. Who would accept this face for Hamlet? This ill-shaped body for Romeo? His speech has become my speech, but and the fools only look. They cannot listen for laughing.
There have been ugly men before you, and hasn't been cause for murder. Why'd you kill Matchett?
In New York, there was a man, a gross, stupid man, who fancied himself an interpreter of the bard. He took me, as his apprentice. And together we set out for the tour. I would play only the voices. Never Richard. Never Henry. Never Lear. Only the voices. Whilst he, stumbling drunken, he muddled and tore to a tatter the words that I should have spoken.
You killed a man because you wanted to play a hero?
How easily murder is discovered.
Yeah, sometimes, I guess.
It was yesterday. We were leaving Hayes City. We played there for 2 days, and it made me a laughing stock. It was night. And he became drunk and threatened to leave me in the next town. I made him stop the wagon and taking up a pistol, I shot him. He did not die at first. And when I saw what I had done, I wanted him to live. And I put him into the wagon and I drove on, hoping to find a doctor. Then, as the night passed, I saw that he had died. And I was afraid.
The wagon broke down?
Yes. I put my purse into his clothes and took his name for mine. How I've hated the name of Sam Matchett. But you wouldn't understand.
I wouldn't. Well, what now?
I want to live. I want my chance.
You've done a murder. I can't let you go. You know that. Don't make it harder.
I lost my husband 2 years ago. I know what it is to be alone. You've been alone, haven't you? I'm sorry. But you killed someone.
We may pity, though not pardon, dear. I'm going now, Marshal.
If you walk out of there with your gun, you're a dead man.
Death's a great disguiser. I must have my chance.
Don't do it, Matchett. There'll be killing.
Madam, forgive me. I would not have harmed your children.
Matchett, put down your gun.
Let me go my way. Please.
There are a lot of men waiting for you out there, Matchett. You know what'll happen if you open the door. Don't do it, Matchett.
Sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come.
Match it. He knew he was going to die. The minute he opened that door, he knew it. And maybe he wanted to, because he fired first, a single shot. We buried him in back of the church, and I found some words in a book to put on his grave. He that dies pays all debts.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Anthony Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Hans Conried was featured as Henry, with Mary Lansing as Mrs. Cullen. Parley Bear is Chester and Howard McNear is Doc. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Roy Rowan speaking. Remember, Gangbusters going to action Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Spooks is going to be on Darkness Radio. Have Tim and Dave gone mad? Well, have they? Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Inner Sanctum entitled No Coffin for the Dead.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, fiends. friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is Raymond, your host, inviting you through the squeaking door. Don't hesitate. Come right in. Oh, it's a bit dark. Careful, don't brush up against that skeleton. Oh, he's quite harmless, I assure you. He's only the skeleton in our closet come out for a bit of air.
The idea of a skeleton coming out for air. Such nonsense.
Oh, you mean because it's already so well ventilated? Oh, how do you do, Mary Bennett?
Hello, Mr. Raymond. Now, you tell me truthfully, is there a family skeleton in your closet?
Oh, yes, indeed. And what's more, we make no bones about it. But I'd like to really get him out of the closet. I need space to store my Lipton's noodle soup.
What a silly thing to say. You know very well that Lipton's noodle soup comes in a tidy little package that takes up hardly any room at all.
Oh.
Fact is, Lipton's is convenient all the way around. It takes hardly any time to make, costs less, and makes lots more than canned soups. And when it comes to flavor, nothing can beat Lipton's. It's a grand, homemade-tasting noodle soup with a chickeny flavor. And, folks, Lipton's is just swimming with tender, golden egg noodles. It's like I always say, you just don't know how good noodle soup can be till you've tried Lipton's.
And like I always say, tonight, put a tight hat on your head so your hair won't rise. And get ready to listen to No Coffin for the Dead. It's an original story by Emil Tepperman. And our star tonight is that famous radio actor, Les Tremaine, who plays the part of Tom Archer. Along the swanky East River Drive, all is quiet, except for the footsteps of two men who hurry toward one of the many tall apartment houses. Let me introduce you quickly to these two men before death strikes out at them. The man on the outside, the tall, blonde man, is District Attorney Tom Archer. The other one, the lean, dark-haired fellow, is Tom Archer's assistant, John Frame. Tom's really worried about him.
I'll walk you to the door of your house, John. I don't like your being out alone this late at night. Whoever's been sending you those threatening letters isn't John. Look out, John! That fellow in the alley with a knife! Look out! Drop that knife! You!
Why, you've killed him. You've killed John Frame. No! Keep back, you! No! Come with that knife, you don't! No! Don't stab me! Well, the devil killed John Frame. He stabbed me. I'll remember his face if I ever see him again. I'll remember.
When I began to regain consciousness after that attack, I was lying on the ground at the mouth of a little alley near John Frame's home. A fussy little ambulance intern just finished working over me. There was a small crowd around me, and I glimpsed the face of Detective Inspector Lambert just behind the intern.
There. Feel better now, Mr. Archer?
How is he, Doc?
About got him fixed up, Inspector Lambert. I think he'll be all right. He's conscious now.
Can I talk to him?
Yeah, but better not move him for a few minutes till the shock wears off.
How are you, Mr. Archer?
Well, pretty good. I feel like a mummy with all these bandages.
Yeah, both hands. What did they do? Jump you with knives?
Well, we were passing the alley. John and I... John? What happened to John Frayne? Speak up, Inspector. What happened to John?
Now, take it easy, Mr. Archer.
John's dead.
They got him in the back. Right through the heart.
Oh, merciful heaven. John?
Did you get a look at the killers, Mr. Archer? Could you identify them?
Well, there was only one man. He came out of the alley. He stabbed John, and then he swung at me. I didn't have time to go for my gun, so I caught the blade in my bare hands. And he ripped the knife away and stabbed at me I don't know how many times.
Six stab wounds, Mr. Archer. You're darn lucky none of them hit a vital spot. That was a brave thing, grabbing the knife with your bare hands. Probably saved your life.
That's the mistake the killer made, leaving me alive. I've seen his face. I'll catch up with him. If it takes the rest of my life. I was a bit shaky on my feet when Inspector Lambert and the intern helped me up. But I insisted on going over to where the body of John Frayne lay, covered with a white sheet. And then I saw Susan leaning against the great covering bulk of old Mrs. Hogan, her housekeeper. She was looking down at the shroud that covered her husband's body.
It was God's will, Mrs. Frayne.
Susan.
Oh, Tom. Tom, I can't believe it. John.
Be brave, Susan. John's dead. Nothing I can say will replace him.
Have you any idea who the murderer is?
I saw his face for a moment, that's all. But I'll recognize it again, I'm sure.
Mr. Archer, here's something we found in the alley.
What is it, Inspector?
Looks like the charm off a watch fob. It's broken off.
A charm? Well.
You recognize it, Mrs. Frayne?
Oh, no. No, it can't be. It can't be.
No, no, of course not, Susan. There are hundreds of watch charms like this one.
What is it, Mrs. Frayne?
That watch charm is my younger brother, Peter, wears one just like it.
Oh?
Oh, nonsense, Lambert. You can buy those in any jewelry store. Besides, I saw the killer's face. It wasn't Pete. Mrs. Hogan.
Yes, Mr. Archer?
Please take Mrs. Frayne upstairs now.
That I'll do. Come along, darling.
I'll see you later, Susan.
Oh, please stay here, Tom. You're hurt. All those wounds.
I'll be okay. Right now, I'm going to go downtown with Inspector Lambert and look at pictures. While that murderer's face is fresh in my mind. At headquarters, I looked through hundreds of pictures in the rogues gallery. It was just 2 hours before I came upon the photograph. Lambert, this is our man.
You're sure?
Positive. I'll never forget that face. Turn it over. Let's see the name, quick.
Right. Art Hogan.
Good heavens. Art Hogan. That would be the son of old Mrs. Hogan, the Frayne housekeeper. Lambert and I both remembered the case of Bart Hogan. It went back 5 years before John Frayne had married Susan. Bart Hogan had lived with his mother, both working for Susan's father. One day, Bart Hogan had snatched up a kitchen knife and attacked Susan's father with mad fury. Only John's lucky arrival had saved the old man. John subdued Bart Hogan. The mad youngster had been committed to the state asylum for life. But he had escaped 7 months ago. Nobody had heard from him since then. Until tonight.
Great Scott. So that murderous kid has come back after all these years to get his revenge.
I'm going back to the Frayne house. I want to talk to Mrs. Hogan.
You think she might know where her son can be found?
Who knows? I'll talk to her anyway.
By the way, Mr. Archer.
Yes?
While you're up there, suppose you just kind of check on whether Brother Pete has lost his watch charm. Frayne's occupied a top-floor duplex in the riverfront apartment house. I took the elevator up, and Mrs. Hogan admitted me.
I'll take your hat and coat, Mr. Archer.
Thank you. Mrs. Hogan, where's your son, Bart?
Bart? Well, why'd you ask after Bart?
Have you seen or heard from him since he escaped from the state asylum?
What makes you ask that?
Mrs. Hogan, there's reason to believe that the person who attacked us in the alley is your son, Bart.
Oh, no, no, never say that, Mr. Archer.
I'm afraid it's true.
No, it couldn't be. I swear to you, it couldn't be Bart.
Why not?
I can't tell you why, but it wasn't Bart, I'm sure.
What makes you so sure? You know where he's been hiding since his escape? You know where he is now?
Oh, heaven help me.
If you know where he is, you must give him up.
But he didn't do it. He didn't.
Believe me, Mrs. Hogan, I understand how you feel. But it'd be far better for Bart to go back to the state asylum than to be hunted for this new crime if he didn't do it.
Mr. Archer, if I proved to you that Bart couldn't have done it, would you let him be, not make him go back to the asylum?
Well, I don't know what to say. You see, I was downtown just now, and I recognized the picture of the man who attacked us. It turned out to be your son. There's very little chance that I was mistaken.
But if I prove he couldn't have done it...
How can you prove it?
Well, come, I'll show you.
Her usually ruddy face was drained of blood as she led me up the stairs to the upper floor of the duplex, and then along the hall to her room.
I always keep the door locked. Go inside, please.
Oh, I don't see anything in this room, Mrs. Hogan.
Well, over here, please, the closet. Hmm.
Is that you, Ma? Is that you?
It's all right, Bart, darling. I brought a good friend.
Good heavens. You've been hiding him here in this closet?
For 7 months now. When he escaped from the asylum, he came here. I cleared out the closet. It just holds the cot. He lies in there night and day.
Where's he, Ma? Where'd you bring him? What's he want?
Don't be afraid, Bart. Mr. Archer won't hurt you. He wants to ask you some questions.
Bart, have you been out of this room tonight?
Out? Me? Not a chance.
He tells the truth, Mr. Archer. Here, I'll pull the blanket back and show you the proof. There. Look at his legs. He was shot in both legs when he escaped from the asylum. I couldn't get medical attention for him, and the wounds never healed properly.
I see.
You must believe me now, Mr. Archer. Bart couldn't be one who attacked you, because... Well, he'll never be able to walk as long as he lives.
Well, now, if Bart Hogan didn't do it, and mind you, I said if, then who did kill poor John Frayne? Well, whoever killed him must have been a rather cheerful person because he took life so cheerfully.
Cheerful, indeed. Mr. Raymond, you've always had such gruesome thoughts on your mind, you wouldn't recognize something cheerful if you met right up with it.
Oh, now, Mary, aren't you being a bit unfair?
No, I'm not. You just don't know what folks like. But you listen to me, because I'm going to make a suggestion that'll please everyone.
All right.
Folks, if you want to give the boys overseas a real taste of home, why not send them a package or two of Lipton's noodle soup? It's so easy to do. You don't even need a request slip. You know, a bowl of hot soup makes a mighty good snack for the boys. And when they receive Lipton's noodle soup mix, they're getting that old-fashioned kind of chicken-y-tasting noodle soup. So send a package or two of Lipton's to your favorite serviceman.
That's a terrific suggestion. And here's another thing that pleases me. There seems to be plenty of murder ahead in tonight's story. You remember that pretty little girl, Susan? Well, looks like she's next on the murderer's list. How about that, Tom? Come on, tell us more, and don't spare the gore.
When I entered the living room on the lower floor, a few minutes later, Susan and Peter were there with Arnold Matson, the lawyer.
I tell you, this is a serious problem, Susan, and we've got to find an answer to it.
There is no answer, Mr. Matson. Oh, Tom, thank heaven you've come at last.
Hello, Susan. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
You know Mr. Matson, of course.
Of course. I understand, Mr. Archer, that you narrowly escaped the same fate as poor John.
Well, I was lucky.
Those bandages must be a nuisance.
I can stand them. Bandages are better than a shroud. By the way, Peter, that looks like a new watch charm you're wearing.
What, this? Oh, I lost the other one someplace, so I bought a new one. What of it?
Oh, nothing. Now, Mr. Matson, when I came in, you were saying something about a serious problem.
Exactly. As you know, Susan's father left an estate of $1.25 million in a trust fund to be paid to Susan on her 23rd birthday.
Yes, I know. And she'll be 23 next month.
But there's a proviso in the will, Mr. Archer. In order to receive the inheritance, Susan must be married and living with her husband on that date.
Please, Mr. Matson, I don't want to talk about the money.
Yes, but don't you see? You'll lose it all. Will distinctly says that you must be living with your husband. If not, then the money goes to 8 charities, except for $50,000 to Peter.
I don't care. I don't care what happens to the money. Without John, it doesn't matter.
Well, Peter, it'll be a break for you.
What do you mean by that, Matson?
Well, there's no need to become enraged, Peter. I only pointed out...
Oh, you filthy rat, I'll show you what I'm going to do.
Take it easy, Pete. Let go of me.
All right, take your hands off me. Why are you all looking at me like that? You look as if you thought I killed John. Well, say it. Why don't you say what you think?
Better cool off a little, Pete. This is no time for a scene.
Yeah? For that matter, Tom Archer, what about you? You'd like to marry Susan yourself, wouldn't you?
Why, you rotten little... You better cool off a little, Tom. This is no time for a scene.
No, I'm sorry. Yes, Peter, you're right. I would like to marry Susan. You know that, don't you?
Yes, Tom, I know.
Yeah. You two look at each other like a couple of puppies in love.
I'm going to get a drink. And nuts to the 50,000.
Right, George, I've got it.
Got what, Mr. Matson?
The solution to our problem.
What are you talking about?
That's it, don't you see, Susan? You can marry Tom Archer here, and then you'll be able to legally claim the estate on your birthday.
Well, that's a pretty callous thing to suggest, Matson.
Callous? I'm a lawyer. It's my duty to protect my client.
I couldn't do it.
Of course not. Look here, Susan. Is there anyone else in the world who would benefit by John's death?
I don't know. I can't think.
What's the difference? Are you still looking for clues, Archer? You know who the murderer is, young Bart Hogan. Why look further?
Bart Hogan?
Matson, how did you know about Bart Hogan?
What do you mean?
Well, I just come from Inspector Lambert's office. There was nobody present when we found Hogan's picture. How did you know about it?
Well, it's really quite simple. I phoned headquarters a little while ago, and Inspector Lambert told me.
Archer, Matson!
What's that? Peter!
Archer, come quick, in the kitchen.
Come along, Matson, quick.
Yes.
You stay here, Susan. All right, Pete, take it easy. We're coming.
Down the hall, the kitchen.
Get hold of yourself.
You open the door. I can't.
Look, go ahead, Archer. Open it. Good heavens.
It's Mrs. Hogan. She lay on the kitchen floor on her back with blood all over her clothes. The blood came from a gaping knife wound in her throat. And the knife lay on the floor alongside her.
I found her that way.
Her body is warm. She was killed within the last 10 or 15 minutes.
Then the killer's running loose somewhere in the house.
Susan, she's alone.
Good heavens, there on the floor.
Susan, darling.
Is she dead?
No, she's only fainted. The shock.
Oh.
It's all right, Susan.
What happened? Was it Mrs. Hogan?
Yes.
Who?
We don't know. But the killer's in the house.
That madman is liable to kill us all, one at a time. I have a revolver. Let's search the house.
Right. Matson, you go in the kitchen and stand guard over that knife. There may be fingerprints on
it. Very well.
Peter, you stay here with Susan. Here's my gun. Don't be afraid to use it.
Now, wait. Wait just a minute.
What is it, Matson?
Has it occurred to you the killer may be one of us?
One of us? What are you looking at me for?
You were out of this room for quite a while.
Why, you are a kid!
Look out, the gun!
Much better. I'll take the gun.
He was going to shoot me.
Sorry. I lost my head.
Oh, Susan, I'm sorry you have to go through all this. Everybody's on edge. There's a killer loose in the house, and we've got to find him.
Yes, Tom. I know you'll do whatever's right.
I'll try. You two, you can both stay here with Susan. I'll search the house myself. Matson, call the police.
Yes, but how can you hold the gun with your hands all bandaged? You can't pull the trigger.
I'll use it as a club. All right, now. Don't move out of this room till I return.
Be careful, Tom. You mustn't let anything happen to you, too.
I went slowly up the stairs to the upper floor, gripping the gun by the barrel in my bandaged hand. At the end of the hall, I stopped before the door of Mrs. Hogan's room. I opened the door with the keys. Inside the room, the closet door was open. Bart Hogan was still lying on his cot. He must have been expecting me. His eyes were wild with terror. He had a long pencil clutched in his right hand, the only weapon he could find to use against me. His left fist was clutched into a tight ball. He watched me, stiff with fear, as I moved slowly toward him, across the room.
Keep away from me!
I had no time to waste on him. I swept aside the fist that clutched the pencil.
Help!
And brought the revolver butt down hard on his forehead. I went over to the window, opened it. Then I went back to the bed, pulled the sheet, pulled it away, lifted him. His weak and withered legs dangled uselessly. I carried him over to the window, rested him against the sill. He opened his eyes. He was recovering from the blow. I didn't wait. I pushed hard. He went toppling out of the window. I leaned over and saw the body strike against the 10th floor setback, then go hurtling into the air and smash down upon the pavement far below. There wasn't enough of him left to perform an autopsy on. They'd never know his legs had been no good, that he hadn't been able to walk. Everything would be easy sailing from here on. Susan would marry me to save the estate. $1.25 million. Oh, I'd been clever enough. When I called out that fake warning at the mouth of the alley, I myself stabbed John in the back. Then I sliced myself up. They'd taken my story at face value, Lambert and the others. I'd guessed that Mrs. Hogan was hiding Bart, but just as a precaution, I'd stolen Peter's watch chain and dropped it at the scene of the crime in case I should need another suspect. But when I found Bart couldn't walk, it became necessary to kill Mrs. Hogan, too, for she was the only one who could tell the police that Bart hadn't been able to walk. All I had to do now was go down and say I'd found Bart, we had fought, and he had fallen from the window. The perfect crime. I took one more last look down into the street, where a crowd had gathered around Bart's body. I was able to make out the figure of Inspector Lambert bending over what was left of him. And I saw Lambert force something out of the clenched left fist of the dead body. In a flash, I remembered that feeble little pencil with which Bart had tried to defend himself. I pulled in my head from the window and glanced across to the closet. I saw it at once. A small white scratch pad. I rushed across the room and snatched up the pad. There, on the topmost page, were the indentations of what Bart Hogan had written on the page and then had torn off. I could read it clearly. I could almost imagine his terrified voicing of the frightened appeal as he wrote it.
Archer was here. He means to kill me. He wants them to think I killed John Frayne. But I can't walk. I've got 2 bullets in my legs. For God's sake, save me.
Bart had written that note, meaning to throw it out the window. But I had come back too soon for him. And I had thrown it out of the window for him. I went back to the window and looked down. I saw Lambert peering up. Then he turned away and hurried toward the entrance of the building. He's coming for me. There's only one thing for me to do now. I've locked the door. It'll take time to break it down. In the meantime, I've taken the bandage off my right hand. I'm writing a full account of tonight's work. I gambled for a fortune, and I lost.
Oh, dear. And I love that boy so. Yes, sir, he seemed like such a nice young man. Well, his trouble was he tried to commit the perfect crime without first practicing up on minor crimes. He should have started by stealing watermelons and then maybe tried his hand at robbing mail trains.
Mr. Raymond, what are you suggesting? And just when I was getting ready to tell people to send a bowl of soup to the boys overseas.
Wouldn't the soup get cold by the time it arrived?
Oh, of course not. Why, Lipton's noodle soup mix comes in a flat package.
Mm.
You simply send it along to your favorite soldier.
Oh.
And he'll be pleased by your little gift because this noodle soup is just like a, well, just like a taste of home. So enclose a package or two of Lipton's the next time you write to him.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry you have to go so soon. But drop in again next Tuesday for another little blood fest. You know, some people have to commit murders to get a kick out of life. Others get their satisfaction from listening to Inner Sanctum. But word of advice. If you've got to commit a murder, please don't get yourself caught. Because if you do, you'll surely get a free ride with the only person never bothered by backseat drivers. I mean that they're hearse drivers. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is A Time to Die by Hilda Lawrence. Now, I guess it's time to close that there squeaking door until next week when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you another Inner Sanctum Mystery directed by Hyman Brown. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Folks, here we are outside the squeaking door, and I guess we're all pretty shaken up after hearing about those murders. But I know just the thing that'll put us back to normal again. It's Lipton tea. Yes, a cup of that brisk Lipton tea would do just fine. And did you notice that word brisk? B-R-I-S-K. It's a mighty important word in tea language. The tea experts always use it. It means that Lipton tea has a lively flavor. It's never wishy-washy. That's why most folks prefer Lipton's to any other kind. Now, don't forget, that's Lipton tea. And don't forget to tune in again next Tuesday night to Inner Sanctum.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Thank you.
Cajun's old-time radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.